For three decades, our first guest lobbied on behalf of the most famous tiger in the world. George Franklin is the former vice president of worldwide government relations for the Kellogg Company of Battle Creek. Obviously, the tiger is Tony. In his book, Raisin Bran and Other Cereal Wars, Mr. Franklin writes that the role of a lobbyist is widely misunderstood. Many people realize that a lobbyist's job is to influence government policymakers. At the same time, he says one of the most frequent questions he's heard over the years is, what do lobbyists do anyway? He says the government relations profession, which is frequently the object of scorn, is actually about integrity and trust. Today, George Franklin is president of Franklin Public Affairs, LLC in Kalamazoo, and he joins us now in Studio S. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, and I have to say, what beautiful music to start the day.
I know.
Beautiful.
Abby has a wonderful voice, and we're going to hear more of it this hour. While you were at Kellogg, who exactly did you focus your efforts on then? Was it with a Michigan congressional delegation, or whom?
Well, it was actually a combination of state, federal, and international, for that matter. I was a one-man shop there for a long time, and then there were two or three of us for a while. But the focus was a lot of Michigan, but Kellogg has plants all around the world. Mm-hmm. Kellogg has plants around the United States, and so you'd work with the different delegations, whether it be Nebraska, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and so on.
Who on the Hill did you get to know best, though? Did you get to know Debbie Stabenow and Carl Levin really well?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Wonderful people. You can't get a much more distinguished statesman than Carl Levin. We all know that. Whatever your politics were, just a total class act. Debbie has become a leader in the Senate, chairing the Senate Ag Committee. You know, she was one of the few people that was able to actually get a bipartisan bill passed the last Congress, the Farm Bill.
And I would think, as a representative of Kellogg's, you would definitely have some contact with people on the Ag Committees.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And then Fred Upton, of course, from Kalamazoo, yeah, who chairs the Energy and Commerce Committee. And, you know, we've been very blessed in Michigan to have a very classy, distinguished, and for that matter, powerful delegation representing us in Washington. Dave Camp, name a few more.
How do elected officials tend to regard lobbyists?
I think they look upon us, hopefully they look upon us, and let me digress for a second. You mentioned in your introduction, the image of lobbyists is exactly the opposite of what makes a good lobbyist. Lobbyists have to be credible, reliable, and trustworthy. And yet this image of the industry is this sort of Jack Abramoff kind of character.
Influence peddler,
you know, deals in the hallway and this kind of thing. It's actually the opposite. If I go to Gary Peters or Debbie Stabenow or Fred Upton, they have to be able to trust what I'm telling them, that it has to be based on the facts and an accurate portrayal of the facts. And then I'm also giving them a heads up on politically the pros and the cons of what I might be asking them to do. So it's not a narrative people want to hear because it doesn't fit the image. And if I also will say, while I'm on this, the image of people in Congress, you know, these are hardworking, decent people. Sure, there's some bad cats. Sure, there's some rotten apples. There is, you know, you don't want the people to run to be running your company either. I mean, there are bad people in business. There's bad people in labor. But the reality is these people are neighbors. They're our friends. They come from East Lansing. They get elected to the office. They have extremely difficult jobs. And they work harder and are a lot more conscientious than people give them credit for.
There is this tormented issue of money, though, of course. Was Kellogg's a contributor to political campaigns?
Yep.
And that spells access to a lot of people, and a lot of people start to distrust the process at that point.
That's what it does, and it is totally out of control. I actually worked on the committee that wrote the Federal Election Campaign Act that was meant as a reform. You have to remember, before the Federal Election Campaign Act that created political action committees, you just had unregulated, unaccountable streams of money. And the idea was to set up collective organizations where people as groups could combine and contribute and support candidates that supported their causes. The problem was, Mark, is it's created this arms race. Because all of a sudden, then you hit a situation where every company decided, well, I guess we need to start a PAC, even though we didn't have one. But in order to participate, we need a PAC, so let's start one. And then the labor guys had PACs, and then the consumer groups got PAC. And so you created this arms race that then was compounded by the Supreme Court decisions.
What'd you make of Citizens United?
I totally disagreed with the impact it had. And actually, as an aside, one time I was with Senator Levin, and I was sort of in exasperation. I said, you know, Senator, isn't something you people can do about this? This money is just out of control. And he said, well, other than changing the Constitution, no. And of course, I would add, other than changing the Constitution or the people that interpret the Constitution, you can't do anything about it. So there's only one of two ways to correct it.
George Franklin is my guest. Mr. Franklin spent 30 years lobbying for Kellogg's of Battle Creek, and he writes about his experiences in the life of a government relations professional in his book Raisin Bran and Other Cereal Wars, 30 Years of Lobbying for the Most Famous Tiger in the World. I know you consider one of your biggest lobbying challenges Kellogg's effort to convince lawmakers not to ban cereal ads aimed at children. You write in the book, the two issues which ensure continued employment for food lobbyists are the sugar program and advertising to children. Regardless of which side you're on, these two issues continue to be gifts that keep giving and have put lots of lobbyist kids through college.
Well, there's no question about it. And, you know, people forget that the consumer groups are in the business of being consumer groups. So these are the issues that keep giving there. The sugar program is amazing. I mean, the sugar program costs American food manufacturers hundreds of millions of dollars. And for years, we have been beaten by the sugar growers around the country. And because they have a couple things going for them. One, they have what I call the intensity of the issue. And if you're a senator from Michigan or Florida or Louisiana, and your sugar people come to you, there is only one vote that counts, your vote on the sugar program. On the other hand, if you're Kellogg or Kraft or Coca-Cola, whoever, and you come to them with a request, well, you're going to probably come with about 9 or 10 other things during the year also. But they can help you on other issues, be of great service, be a proponent. But to the sugar guys, the sugar growers, there's only one that counts. And so they have members that will fall on their swords to keep that program going. And the other thing is, I mean, Marco Rubio voted for the sugar program.
Okay.
And it's the strength of constituent pressure, which in a way is what their job is to do, is to look after their states, their growers, their farmers, and so on. But then they get competing interests from the companies, and that's the rub. But it has been, they are very good at what they do and have been very successful.
You worked behind the scenes to help free a Kellogg plant trade unionist in South Africa during apartheid. Sounds dramatic. Could you tell us about that?
It actually was very dramatic. And Kellogg, when apartheid, the horrific system of apartheid was still in effect in South Africa, there was a big movement led by Congressman Howard Wolpe of Battle Creek to force American companies to divest from South Africa. It was an extremely contentious issue. There was, you know, elements of race, oppression, terror, you name it. We decided as a company, and felt very strongly, that you cannot change things by, quote, remote control. We had a plant in Springs, South Africa, outside of Johannesburg. And we recognized the black trade union that worked in our plant, even though it was against the law. The black trade union was led by a fellow named Christopher Lamini, who was a labor leader, member of the Communist Party, first vice president of COSATU. And I'll make this quick. That was the labor union, the black labor union. Well, I got a call one weekend from our plant manager telling me that Christopher had been taken away over the night from his township, a township called Quatema. They had black townships, and that they were very concerned about his well-being. And this is, of course, is a time when people were taken to an infamous prison called John Vosster Square and sort of magically fell out of windows and were found dead the next day and hung and, you mm-hmm. know, god-awful things. So I called our CEO, a guy named Bill DeMoth in Battle Creek, and he said, I want you to get a message to President Botha and tell him that if Christopher is not released and immediately released unharmed, I'm going to walk out and hold a press conference. We are leaving South Africa. And Mark, I was like, whoa, this is over my pay grade.
But wow.
I knew the ambassador from South Africa. I got a hold of his office, and I have a message for Mr. Lamothe for President Botha, whose nickname was the Great Crocodile, tough Afrikaner, that if Christopher is not released, he's going to hold a press conference for leaving. About 2 days later, President Botha called Mr. Lamothe in Battle Creek and told him that Christopher would be released unharmed, which he was. And on subsequent trips, I would see Christopher when we would go there, and he had said, you know, if you had not intervened, I'd be dead. On a lighter note, fast forward, Mandela's released. Christopher becomes a member of parliament.
Okay? How about that?
He goes from making cornflakes on the floor in Springs and becomes a member of parliament. But then about, I don't know, 5-6 years later, I forget the exact, I'm with some Kellogg guys in Beijing, and I said, you guys want to have some fun? And I said, let's go see the ambassador from South Africa. And they go, look at me, say, Frank, what the hell are you talking about? I said, I guarantee you he'll see us. Well, you know the end of the story.
How about that?
Christopher Lamini was the ambassador to China from South Africa.
Wonderful story. We have to leave it there. I want to thank you so much for journeying up here today to Studio S in East Lansing from Kalamazoo. Our guest has been George Franklin. Today he's president of Franklin Public Affairs in Kalamazoo, but for 30 years he was the vice president of worldwide government relations for Kellogg of Battle Creek. His book is called Raisin Bran and Other Cereal Wars. Thank you very much, George
Franklin. If you want to return the favor, give me a copy of Abby's album.
Oh, my goodness. What an endorsement.
Beautiful.
Very
for
good.
Having me.
Thank you, George.